we'll get started. We have a quorum. I'll bring the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee to order. We have the minutes of last Thursday's meeting. Representative Scott, would you like to move the minutes?
Yes, I'll move the minutes from last
Thank you. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Mr. Meyer, could you refresh us? It's been a few days. What part of your program are we on? And the anticipation, I believe you've got about another hour.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. What we've covered so far, and you can see a good layout of this slide here, we've covered lands and minerals. Actually, lands and minerals has no change items, so we didn't do anything there. Ecological and water resources, talking about the change items and aquatic invasive species and some of those things, the water management account. We covered fisheries and wildlife with our license fee increases and some change items there. And we have also talked about enforcement and our academy and establishing the officer training account with the KT surcharge dollars. So what we have left today, Mr. Chairman, is forestry, parks and trails, and operations support. And I'm hoping you folks can bear with me because I'm going to jump around a little bit, but I'll tell you where we're at when I do that. So the slides that are on the screen are on, you have a two-slide per page sheet that I'm working off of on that. And then also, just a reminder, you also have a packet of fact sheets that have a cover letter from the commissioner that you should have within your binder, hopefully. This provides more detail on each change item that we'll end up covering, and also a contact number for a person or myself or the division director who's associated with that change item. So, Mr. Chairman, forestry actually starts on page 16. The bottom is just an introductory slide, and the change items start on page 17. If everybody's ready, and let me do one reminder here. Some people have asked me about questions they brought up at the previous hearings. We're working on compiling a letter back to the committee with the response to all of those individual questions that it's my goal, Mr. Chairman, to have to you by the end of the week, if possible. So all of the responses that we have, and I'll check with staff to make sure that we didn't miss any, will be answered in detail with some supporting documentation by the end of the week.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to let folks know it's my birthday today, so I brought some treats. I did leave them overnight in the truck, so they may be a little cold. But.
Well, happy birthday, Representative Hansen. Good deal. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you so much. This first slide, just as an example, just to remind you of the forestry budget, the Division of Forestry, it's $170 million, with a large portion of that of $49 million from the general fund, which represents 28%. The other largest piece comes from the Forest Management Investment Account, $26.4 million from the net, which is in the Natural Resources Fund. Then you can see General Fund Fire and also the Special Revenue Funds. I believe that's the open appropriation for the fires and other funds there. Some of the strategic objectives that we've talked about previously, fire management, forest land management, cooperative management, and the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. The first change item, Mr. Chairman, and now I'm on the slide on the top of page 18, is with the Forest Management Investment Account. And what we're asking for here is a $2 million appropriation out of the Forest Management Investment Account. This is an account that was established several years ago that helps us establish and actually do our forestry work. It's previously been appropriated by the legislature, but because of the fluctuation in the account, one of the main things of this is we're asking for a statutory appropriation. Obviously, we can't spend any more money that's within the account, but this would allow us to more effectively be able to do the forest management activities that are associated with this fund, providing timber, putting paint on those trees so they can be cut, having boots in the woods, however you want to approach it, and continuing to maintain and enhance and restore the health of our DNR-administered forest lands. You can see here the bottom bullet is really the guts of this whole presentation or this proposal, is to help us continue to provide at least 800,000 cords of new wood annually, and then again offer a substantial amount of previously offered wood up for sale as well. Sometimes we have 200,000 cords or more of wood that has been sold or put up for auction previously but no one has bid on. We want to reoffer that and try to get that on the market as soon as possible as well. Mr. Chairman, the next change item is a really technical one. We received an appropriation out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund bill associated with the Forest Legacy or Minnesota Forest for the Future proposal or funding within the Upper Mississippi, the Blandon Project, however you want to call it that. There was also within that account or that proposal, that appropriation I should say, $750,000 for conservation easement stewardship, monitoring, and enforcement. Those funds were appropriated to us, but they weren't put into an account. So what we want to do is establish this account. This is somewhat similar to the proposal that, you and others have been talking about with the protection account. We want to establish an account within the DNR for these dollars that have already been appropriated to us to do these activities. Now, these funds expire June 30th of 2011, so we want to make sure that we do that within this budget bill. And again, you can see under the proposal, this would be a statutory appropriation for the funds each year to the commissioner for easement management of that Blandon easement and other forests for the future easements as we move forward. The expected outcomes are really simple with this one: safeguard the public's investment in conservation easements and ensure that the properties continue to provide the benefits or those sticks that we purchased out of the bundle to move forward.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, on with that enforcement monitoring, has the DNR map those parcels? I mean, can a Minnesotan go online and say, where is this property, and find it on online and then go visit it and walk on? I mean, how user-friendly is this appropriation in terms of even identifying where these parcels are for Minnesotans to visit?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, this appropriation isn't for that online access piece, if you want to call it that. This is to actually do the stewardship work. But what you're talking about is really the guts of our lands record management system that will be rolling out in two phases now. We got a little bit behind, but first phase this summer, and then it'll be fully implementable next January is our goal, where online you will be able to see not only the boundaries and the borders and what's going on there, but also the documents, the legal documents, the deeds, transfers, and all of those are all being scanned right now into a digital format.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, a follow-up. So if using this particular appropriation and you go out, boots on the ground, you visit the parcel, and lo and behold, there's a building built on the tract, potentially in violation of the easement, what are the consequences? This is a monitoring to do the monitoring. What are the consequences for a violation of the easement?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, ultimately it goes back to the terms that have been negotiated on that easement, what we've bought for protection rights. But in that case, if that building was not allowed on that easement, we would have, the landowner would be responsible for tearing it down and putting, restoring that piece of ground back to the original condition it was in before that building was put there.
Representative Hansen.
One final one, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So let's say a permanent deer stand was erected on the property by a Minnesotan, and if that violates the terms of the easement, then it would be the responsibility of UPM Kimini to remove that and bring it back to the way it was.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I believe so on that particular easement. Permanent deer stand is kind of a difficult example, I think, depending on where it's at and what rights have been or have not been bought, but I can get back to you on that specific example.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you talk about the $750,000 from FY 10-11. What was the source of those funds?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, these were from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. You can see on that top line, it was a transfer from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to the Department of Natural Resources.
And
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what were they designated for again?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, the intent was for conservation easement monitoring and protection steward for exactly what we're talking about here. There was we needed to go one step further in that appropriation was to establish the account and put those dollars into the account, which wasn't done. So this is really a technical correction with the intent of what those dollars were to be used for.
Thank you.
It's just one more piece of clarification, Mr. Chair. It would be our plan to spend about $30,000 or so a year out of these funds to do these monitoring and enforcement activities. So it's like a long-term perpetual fund almost.
Representative Wiggin, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was the question I was going to ask.
Okay, could I ask a follow-up? Mr. Meyer, was there no instructions from in the legislation as to how much you were expected to pay, or was it was the expectation that it would be set up with an amount spent like you're proposing to do just a smaller amount, and then it would be available for a long, long time? Is that what your understanding from the legislation was?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that was our original understanding of the appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Just real quickly, go back to Representative Hansen's first question, Mr. Chair. If you go on Google, if you go to our WMA website, we have an application on Google Earth that actually pulls in every WMA that we have within the state, in the boundaries, in the roads, in the parking lots, so you can see graphically that, and we need to get that system updated with our easements as well, so you can see all of the land that we have, not only the WMAs, but the SNAs and everything. So firsthand, it's pretty amazing. If you haven't seen it, take a look at it, because it's a great tool if you're looking to scout or to hunt or explore some of these public lands. It shows you firsthand what it is. So just a little plug for that.
Mr. Meyer, to that point, is it coordinated with the federal waterfowl production areas so someone not only would see the land that's often the yellow or the yellow state of Minnesota signs, but the white federal signs, those lands, hunters and bird watchers tend to put those properties together. Do you coordinate with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife so that people can see both sets of properties?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not quite sure about that. I'll check on that, though. If not, it's something we definitely should be doing. So I'll let you know and provide a reason why or why not in our comments.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. You can continue.
Thank you. Moving forward here, members, this next change item is on the page 19, top of page 19. It deals with the ATV account, or their all-terrain vehicle account, and what it is. It's an appropriation out of the balance of those funds for $200,000 in FY12 and $200,013. And of this, $100,000 would be spent on state forest roads, and another $100,000 would be spent on county roads. So we're splitting this state to the county for minimum maintenance forest roads. And really what we're talking about here is making sure that these roads are in the condition to be used, that are part of the ATV trail system, support the minimum maintenance or the maintenance of these grading, a little bit of graveling. A lot of these roads are the backbone of our Class 1 and Class 2 ATV trail system that we have out there. And these funds would be targeted at those segments of state forest roads that are designated ATV trails.
Representative Deal.
Thank you, Chair McNamara. Say, Mr. Meyer, this sounds like a reasonable use of the money. Do you know what AdVam's position is on this?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Deal, we are working with them on that right now. There was a little bit of confusion about the amount of the appropriation at first, but it's my understanding that after this weekend, they will be supporting the funding level at this level.
Thank you.
Thank you. Continue.
Hopefully they'll be supporting it.
Okay. Well, I had the same question. Thank you. Continue, Mr. Meyer.
Members, if there's no other questions, I'm going to move on to the next change item within forestry. This deals with the Heritage Enhancement Account, and this is similar to an appropriation we've received previously, where $1 million each year out of the Heritage Enhancement Account to continue our ecological classification system tools that really help us tell us what we should and shouldn't be planting on those sites based upon the ecology and the biology of the different areas. So this is a one-time appropriation to enhance this ECS work in two areas, accelerate our native plant community mapping, and also to help us continue to develop silvicultural interpretations, or tree management, if you want to call it, for based on the native plant mapping information that we're getting. And you can see the outcomes here. About 100,000 acres identified and mapped each year, and then develop that work program, if you want to call it that, for our tree planting or forestry management activities. Mr. Chair, if there's no questions, I'll move on. That completes the Division of Forestry's change items. And then we're going to skip to Parks and Trails. And that starts on page 20. Thank you. I need all the help I can get today. Most of it, I should say. try to get there. Mr. Chairman, members, just to remind you all, the Parks and Trails budget is made up of $41.5 million general fund, or over 21%. Natural Resources Fund and the Special Revenue Fund make up over 50% of that, with Natural Resources Fund at 45%, or $89 million, and the Special Revenue is at $12 million. These are revenues that are generated from the park system that help us operate programs there. You can see also the Parks and Trails Fund. This past biennium, these were new dollars, 18.6 million, or 18.6%, or over $36 million that came in through there. There's also a small piece of game and fish and federal funds, and some environmental trust fund dollars that were appropriated to us as well. The strategic objectives, I think everybody's familiar with: connecting people to the outdoors, accelerating the management of our natural, cultural, and recreational environments to protect and preserve the best of Minnesota, and also invest in partnerships, processes, and people. Mr. Chairman, the first change item here on the bottom of page 21 is really asking for an appropriation out of the dollars that we were able to successfully generate this past biennium. The State Park Dedicated Account operates. It's an account where the receipts from firewood, gift shop apparel, things like that, go into. And what we're asking for is an appropriation out of that account. $750,000 increase each year since we've increased those revenues the past biennium by over 14%. The maintenance and visitor service costs have gone up, so this will allow us to continue our work, deal with the general fund offset that we're talking about on the other end that we talked about several days ago. The other thing that we're asking for, Mr. Chair and members, is that the State Park Dedicated Account be statutory appropriated annually to the commissioner to allow us to manage this like anybody else would with their checking account, as we talked about with FMIA as well, just to give us more flexibility to meet the continuing demands within the system. The outcomes that we're talking about here are to help us meet our customers' expectations for maintenance and visitor services, and to help us continually to provide the products and services to our customers in an entrepreneurial fashion. We've done a lot of great things this past biennium, and that is shown by the revenues that we've had increased. The I Can Camp program, we did that out at the fair this summer, and we got huge publicity off of it, and the kids and the parents that are using that program are just so excited about it. Geocaching in the state park system, other opportunities, our promotional ventures with Explore Minnesota Tourism not only help the park system, but also help those areas contiguous to the parks, because I think everybody knows not everybody stays in the parks, and only 25% of our park visitors actually stay overnight within the state park system. The rest of them are staying at resorts, hotels, private campgrounds, spending money in the local communities. Mr. Chairman, our next change item within the parks program deals with an appropriation, or a policy piece that we had last year.
Excuse me, Mr. Meyer. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned revenues and such from the state parks. When they're harvested in a state park, native grass seed, for example, does the park get credit for that revenue, or how is that tracked and handled by your department?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, people are going to think I asked him to ask that question, because that's directly related to this next change item here. So that's a great question. Part of what we do, depending on how it's harvested, sometimes we have cooperative harvesting agreements with people. They'll harvest the seed. They'll get some seed. We'll get seed. A lot of it we'll use for ourselves. We really don't sell the seed because it's so valuable for us. But another example of that same type of situation is when we have a timber blowdown and we have to sell that wood. And that's what brought us to this change item here. Previously, those dollars several years ago went to the general fund, where we would have to come back and seek funding to restore, reforest that area. So with the help of the legislature last session, we were able to redirect the dollars in the state working capital account from those management activities into the state working capital account. At the same time, it was capped at only $25,000 a year because people were concerned of the possible general fund impact. Actually, it was the Senate who put the cap on it. And what we're asking to do is remove this $25,000 cap. The money goes into the working capital account, but we can only spend up to $25,000 a year. So realistically, that's a small piece of a reforestation or any kind of restoration activity. So this change item just simply removes that $25,000 cap out of the working capital account.
Continue, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Going back to the dedicated accounts again, Mr. Chairman, and now I'm on page 23, bottom of 22, snowmobile fund. This is our snowmobile registration and trail account dollars, and what we're asking for is an increase in the appropriation of $200,000 a year. Just because of the past couple winters, the amount of revenue we've generated in this fund has grown more than we forecasted. I think the trail passes alone and the registrations, snowmobiles that previously may not have been registered because of a bad winter of snow have been coming in and getting registered and trail stickers and other dollars into the account. So what we're asking for is $200,000 appropriation in 12 and 13 to increase the level of grant and aid program and to help us maintain the current level of effort on our state-maintained snowmobile trails.
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Meyer, I personally think that this is a good change item. The level of maintenance can always be increased on the trails. And, you know, I really think the DNR does do a good job, especially with regarding some of the very remote nature of the trails in the Northeast. Hard to get to, hard to maintain in the early year. But as I recall back, and correct me if I'm wrong, back when the sticker legislation was passed, I thought that in statute that money was dedicated to the club grant and aid program rather than the state corridor trail system. And I'd have to go back and get that information from the statute. I'm just doing this solely from memory. Because I remember there was a big movement within MNUSA, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, to make sure that because MNUSA was the push behind the stickers, to make sure that benefited the grant and aid program. Now, I see up here you say increase the level of effort in the grant and aid program. I assume that you mean maintenance of state trails by making that statement. What exact, can you clarify that? Expected outcomes, the first bullet point. What does that mean specifically?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dillon, and the first part of your question we'll get back to you on because I'm not quite sure if that's correct or not, but we will research this. This will provide more funding available for the grant and aid program. I can break that down specifically what we're talking about. If you look on the fact sheets that we have, the 2011 budget for this activity was a little bit over $3.7 million, which included a one-time $400,000 appropriation in the 10-11 biennium. This request of $200,000 would bring us back to that current appropriation level almost. So it's kind of keeping us at the regular funding without taking into consideration the one-time appropriation that came in. I'll provide more information, Mr. Chairman, in our comments to the committee. And Representative Dill, I will come back and talk to you specifically about this. We are working with MNUSA on this, and they do understand the concept and support it.
Representative Dill.
No, he answered the question before I asked it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer, where are we at with the idea that the sticker and the license would become one item? I would imagine Representative Dill is aware of discussions up at the MNUSA this winter. Did MNUSA come up with, was this an initiative from the DNR or from MNUSA? And maybe you could just expand a little bit to the members what this is about.
Mr. Chair, members, it's a MNUSA initiative, and what it's looking at is utilizing the investment we've made in phase two of our ELS system, which we rolled out last year, and how can we provide trail stickers and registrations more conveniently throughout the state. I remember being up by Voyageurs National Park and purchasing a snowmobile sticker, and there was no stick them on the back of the sticker, and we spent about an hour trying to peel off the back, which we thought was a sticker, and then there was no glue on the back side of it. So we need to make sure that we can make, when people buy a trail pass, they actually have something that they can have, a receipt that they could show to the enforcement officer if they get stopped. Or we're working on some concepts with them, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if we'll have legislation ready to go this season or not, or this session. Part of it relies on, do we just do a receipt, or do we try to come up with some infrastructure to allow those stickers to be bought statewide at some different type of locations or things like that? We actually just had a meeting with them yesterday to discuss that, and hopefully within the next week or so we can have more to talk about with y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Continue.
Members, on that same theme of the dedicated accounts, this next change item would work with the ATV account and is asking for an additional appropriation from those funds as well, $400,000 per year, and it would go into the ATV fund to support the ATV trail system, increasing the maintenance of the trails, and to provide training and more oversight for the grant and aid program. Again, working with MinUSA on this appropriation or this proposal, Mr. Chairman and members. Moving forward, the following change item deals with Camp Forest Campground dollars.
Excuse me, Mr. Meyer.
Yes.
You mentioned MinUSA, but you meant you're working with
ATV trip.
So thank you. Continue, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you very much. This next proposal, Mr. Chairman, deals with the State Forest Campground dollars and where they're deposited. Currently camping on these State Forest Campgrounds, which are similar to our State Park Campgrounds, but they're a little bit more remote. They may not have they don't have visitor centers, things like that, but people do need to pay to use them, and they are a great support part of our system. What this will do, it will take those dollars out of there, and right now $200,000 are deposited in the school trust fund, and the remainder are deposited in the general fund. So the maintenance, management, upkeep of these campgrounds are not being funded out of the dollars we're generating off of those sites. So what we're trying to do is deposit the revenues from the State Forest Campgrounds on non-trust land into the Natural Resources Fund rather than the general fund. And then we'd like to work with the legislature on a statutory appropriation for the purposes of our State Forest Campground management and maintenance and equipment. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. So the outcome here would be provide more stable funding to maintain our campgrounds and day use areas. This next appropriation, Mr. Chairman, deals with the water recreation account, and it's $1 million in 12 and $1 million in 13 to help us maintain our water access sites. What we're trying to do here is these would be used in conjunction with our aquatic invasive species surcharge increase, but really provide some funding to help develop and manage and implement best management practices on water access sites and to address those invasive species issues at the boat facility where these issues are coming from. We would develop these best management practices, put in collection sites for aquatic plants, a box, some kind of collection site where we can collect those materials, people can dispose of them easily. And also it would help fund some boat washing demonstration projects. And the state's not looking to get in the business of these boat sites, washing sites, but we would work with do an RFP is our plan, Mr. Chairman, most likely to work with businesses, local communities, whatever we can do, lake associations possibly, to actually operate and maintain these demonstration sites so we can learn firsthand how to do it. I mean, part of it would probably be development of some portable sites that we could be out doing some of these critical areas at high peak times. The what some people refer to as super spreader lakes, Mille Lacs, Minnetonka, up in the Brainerd area, Gull Lake, that get used heavily. Opening a fishing season is one great example and where we would really need to concentrate not only our education but our enforcement activities and utilize these facilities once they're up and running as well. Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions, the next proposal is a change item within the Parks and Trails account from the lottery in lieu. $300,000 each year. This is an account that's used to support state park and trail operations and maintenance. And this account, this increase in the account would be used to support our maintenance and operations within state parks and trails and assist in meeting our needs, the growing demand for our public services. Connected to that, Mr. Chairman, is a $100,000 appropriation out of the lottery in lieu dollars for our natural resource grant program. For the local trail grants program, I should say, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. What this would allow us to do would be to fund an extra 2 to 4 projects annually and help us move forward in meeting the growing demand for local communities on trail grants, I should say, Mr. Chairman. We went through the division.
Mr. Meyer, Representative Parkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you've identified a number of accounts where we're taking money out and utilizing it. Is there a spot in the information where we can review how much is in the balances of those accounts?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, we're working on a spreadsheet for you all that I will include within our comments that will represent, that will show for the appropriations and the accounts what the balance is, what the change item would be, and what that balance would be moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, following on Representative Torkelson's question, being new to the fiscal side of this committee, it would be helpful for me to be able to see visually all of these accounts and where they fit in. Is there a, do you have some sort of publication that may have kind of a diagram of each account, where it's from, as long as it's not a Venn diagram, of course? That would be helpful to me.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yes, we do, and I apologize if I don't know if I handed that out when we did our kind of overview or not. Actually, on our website, there's a great part of it that talks about each account, a description, and I'll get that for you. We'll include that information within our packet and also email you the link so you can look at it that way as well.
Representative Drazkowski, to that point, and Mr. Meyer, if you could coordinate, Mr. Reinholz is going to also be preparing some information like that, so why don't, Mr. Meyer, if you coordinate with Mr. Reinholz, who's doing what for us, so that we don't get it twice, but we do want it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer,
Drazkowski,
that will be accompanying, of course, the state park information I've asked for a couple times already.
Representative Drazkowski, Mr. Thank Meyer you. Did mention, I think it was maybe before you got here, that he's got a significant amount of information that he's going to be bringing forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For us. Thank you. Continue, Mr. Meyer. Fish and Wildlife.
Mr. Chairman, we've already done the Fish and Wildlife change items when Director Bogus was here. So actually we have one area left, and that's our operations support. And you can see that that starts really on page 31 of the handouts. Operations support encompasses a lot of different pieces here. And this budget, $83.5 million, it includes, as you can see, 66% of that is from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, or $55 million last biennium. Our grant activities throughout the department are coordinated here as well. So we have Outdoor Heritage Fund, we have the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. All of our grants that the DNR passes through go through our Office of Management and Budget Services. This not only provides us, but it provides you, the legislature, and these committees, the councils, making recommendations, the assurance that the appropriations that are being passed through to non-governmental organizations are being dealt with in accordance with the grant rules that are out there within Department of Administration, all federal compliances, and that we are holding these grantees to a high level of accountability, and that they are being monitored for compliance and things like that. Actually, we're just beginning an audit of our legacy appropriation grant program with the Office of Legislative Auditor here in the coming days. So we do, and we take very seriously our grant requirements. You may hear from people that we ask for some things that may seem ridiculous to some people at times, but it's really just to make sure that there's accountability, there's transparency, and that the outcomes are being met by all of these appropriations, because there are a lot of dollars that are going through these activities. A couple of the two areas that are funded up, besides our Office of Management Budget Services, HR, and Management Resources out of these areas, Commissioner's Office and Regional Operations, Mr. Chairman, and we did discuss a change item previously under the change item, the general fund, or the department change levels. That would have there's a $634,000 general fund decrease of the general fund going to the operations support, and then we're asking to utilize some of the balances and other accounts to offset some of that reduction.
Mr. Meyer, it doesn't seem like we have any questions, but I just have one. Can you speak to the actual, what it looks like growth in the commissioner's office and the number of assistant commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, members, yes, and I did provide you all with, I don't have copies for you, but hopefully you can provide, I can provide that organizational chart of that, the new change items or the changes in the commissioner's office in our responses. Under the previous administration, there were several positions that remained unfilled. Our tribal liaison person, who was Paul Swenson up in the Northwest, had retired, and we did not fill that position. There was a special assistant for the commissioner for operations that was the person who was in that position filled the vacancy in the Northeast Regional Director. He went to that position. So there were two vacancies there. Also, we had, at the end of this past year, a person who was helping me retired, and that position was not filled as well. So if you look at the vacancies that were there and what has taken place, there's the commissioner and then two special assistant positions, one of which I'm in, one of which Bob Lassard is in, which is a new position there. The position that Mike Carroll is taking up in the Northwest as an assistant commissioner is really similar to our tribal relations position that we had unfilled. And then the other position that was filled was a communications director position that was vacant for several years as we were trying to figure out, Commissioner Holston was trying to figure out what to do with that position. So there were one new position and a vacancy that was filled under those. And it's more helpful if I had that organizational chart to show you, Mr. Chairman. But that's where the changes have occurred in the organizational chart.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I'm wondering if you can help me out. On page 31 and then also on page 20, you've got the pie charts of the what appears to be the expenditures for these particular, the operations support and the parks and trails. I'm not quite getting it here. It says budget expenditures, which to me suggests from that account, should that be revenue to that account rather than expenditures? We're not sending money to the Outdoor Heritage Fund from the Operations Support Fund, are we?
Mr.
Meyer.
Chair, Representative Drazkowski, the expenditures, this is the money that, I don't show appropriations because the appropriations and expenditures get a little confusing if you try to compare them. So the slide here on the bottom of page 31, that Outdoor Heritage Fund, that $55.1 million, that's the source of the funds. And that's really all the pass-through dollars that went through the different entities that were recommended, that were appropriated money by law the past 2 years. So what this slide shows, those are grants that went out to non-governmental organizations to do the work of protect, enhance, restore fish, game, wildlife, habitat of the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
So,
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Meyer. So the Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars, $51 million, passed through the operations support account, is what you're saying, and came into it and then headed out to wherever it needed to go. It's just a communication thing here. It says expenditures on there, and it seems that actually the money is coming into the fund from those areas and then probably going out on a different graph. Is that what I'm understanding?
Mr. Meyer, and if you could maybe just, do you know an example that would show us what you're talking about, a grant that went out to a different organization that you were I'm assuming you were the fiscal agent for a grant, the Pheasants Forever, that did something somewhere?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, yes, and I apologize. I can show you the appropriations, and this graph doesn't represent the expenditures by the department. This isn't an operation support account. These are the dollars came in or spent by under what we call operations support, our grant management division. The Outdoor Heritage Fund had many different proposals: Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, I don't know how many millions of dollars each one of those were. I can't think of those off the top of my head. An example would be the pass-through grant for the Forest for the Future proposal that we highlighted within the forestry budget of $36 million. Those dollars came in and were expended out. If I show appropriations versus expenditures, it gets a little bit more complicated, especially on the PIL side of things. That's why we don't show it that way, because we're appropriated $46 million for payment in lieu of taxes, but those monies don't show up under our expenditures because they're transferred to Department of Revenue, who expends those dollars. And I'm probably not helping myself here by confusing everybody.
Well, Mr. Meyer, you're not, because PILT's no longer in this committee. It's now in the Department of Revenue. So that example under Governor Dayton's proposal, and one that I actually think makes sense. Not that a lot of the other things he's doing don't make sense. I didn't mean it that way. Any further follow-up, Representative Drazkowski? We're going to get...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still confused, but I'm sure it'll get clearer as we move forward.
Representative Drazkowski, we appreciate your work on these issues. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, you discussed some of the new positions in the commissioner's office. Do those positions have job descriptions with measurable performance standards that performance can be measured by?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes, they do, and they're just like any other position. I can certainly get you a copy of that if you're interested.
Mr. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and that would be helpful to see those position descriptions. Those new positions with the position descriptions, do they, the folks in those positions, when they speak, are they speaking for the Department of Natural Resources? Are they empowered to provide opinion on bills and laws and legislative proposals?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, not unless they specifically say that they are at that point in time.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, just to kind of a go back to last week, we talked a little bit about the license fee increases and so forth. I was back in the district this weekend and stuck my nose into a few bait shops and coffee shops. There's a significant concern in my district about the lack of increase relative to non-residents compared to resident license fees, and that's just for your information type thing.
Representative Fabian, you're not the only one that's heard about that issue. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, thank you very much. It's, that package that we put before you, I consider a work in progress still. We need to work with you all to figure out what those right structures should be. But we heard last week in here, Mr. Chairman, that people were concerned, the Congress of Minnesota Resorters were concerned that the non-resident were going up too much. It's the question on the non-resident side of it is, what's the impact going to be of people coming into the state? I think people know, or anybody who goes to other states, we're still a pretty good deal as it comes to hunting and fishing for non-residents in the region or statewide or country, United States wide.
Representative Fabian, follow up.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Meyer. And the other thing that people talk about too is that if there is going to be an increase in fees, then what my constituents are most concerned about is where are those dollars going to. So if we're increasing fees for fish and wildlife, they want those dollars going back to fish and wildlife.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer.
Representative Fabian, those dollars will go directly back to fish and wildlife. We fund integrity is of the utmost importance to us, and I believe to all of you as well. We will not be using those game and fish dollars or invasive species dollars or any increases we're talking about to be used for any other programs other than their intent. The language that's in the statutes really clarify that. And actually, another thing you will see is we need to extend we need to reestablish the Budget Oversight Committee, the Game and Fish Budget Oversight Committee. They're meeting right now without legislative authority, but that was because of a little hang-up we got into last session, but we met with them just recently, and they review all of our expenditures and balances and what we're doing on all of those game and fish accounts, and they keep a close watch on us, as you do as well.
Thank you. Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I was back in my district, too, and heard similar concerns about fee increases. One suggestion to you, I think everyone would be happy if we either didn't increase fees or decrease the fees.
Thank you, Representative Draskowski. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was back in my district as well and went to a few local establishments, and one of the proposed rules that they're bringing forward now in rulemaking, not legislation, is keeping the entrails of fish so that a conservation officer can determine if the fish were in the slot limit. Now, that would be after you fillet the fish, you would have to keep it in your possession until some point in time. And so it's actually looked upon in my district as a good jobs bill, because what will have to happen is any guides or anyone will have to hire someone to guard the fish from the seagulls while they're having a shore lunch. And then, then they'll be able to later keep them in their possession. So it'll be a good jobs bill, Mr. Meyer, and I want to thank you for that. We're in desperate need of jobs.
Thank you, Representative Bill. Do any other members want to elaborate on their visits over the weekend within their district? Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Next, we're going to bring Department of Commerce forward. Members, we have a handout from them, I believe was passed out this morning, in black and white. Thank you, Department of Commerce, for not being in color. You should all have it. Welcome, Commissioner Rothman, and if you could identify yourself for the record. Why don't we just take a deep breath, Commissioner, and let some of the DNR interested folks exit the room here if they're not interested in commerce. Welcome, Commissioner.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Mike Rothman, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. Also with me this morning is a few of our lead staff, and at the table here this morning is Tim Janke, our Chief Financial Officer. Let me just start off. We'll be brief, as brief as we can be, and responsive to all your questions. I'll start off with our mission, and Tim will cover our numbers, and then specific questions. As you'll see, we have our deputies here and those that are in the leadership for the department. If you turn to the first page, we have set out our overall mission, goals, and leadership team. The department is regulates, as many of you know, approximately 20 or actually, it's more than 20 industries. The goal is to ensure equitable commercial and financial transactions and reliable utility services. The department investigates consumer complaints and works to resolve them. It advocates for the public interest before the regulatory bodies. So, for example, the department is a public advocate with the at the Public Utilities Commission in energy matters. And the Department of Commerce delivers federal and state energy and telecommunications programs to Minnesotans. We'll show you, how that works in our funding. Overall, the department has major goals, and it's a balance. It's a balance between making sure that we foster business growth, economic success in a responsible way, but also to maintain and make sure that our consumers in Minnesota are protected. From the department's perspective, and as we start off in the administration, to the extent that we can, we focus on job creation and then to regulate in a visible and responsible way to make sure that people have access to the department. For example, I've talked to many business leaders in the community and consumer leaders, and many of the functions of the department is to assist those stakeholders with issues that the department that come to the department. So I've introduced myself. Also with me is Steve Carlson, the Deputy Commissioner of Administration. Bill Grant is here. Bill's the Deputy Commissioner for Energy, and Kevin Murphy, our Deputy Commissioner of Financial Institutions and Insurance Matters. So we're available. Plus, we also have, let me just mention, Jeremy DeFebra is here. Jeremy in our energy area. We also have Joel Fisher for the Petro Fund, if there are any questions there, and Diane Wells from Telecommunications. So as you will see, let me just leave you with these thoughts. As we looked at the budget, thoughts are to reallocate our resources to address the issues that are of concern. Number two, we are focused on expediting the rulemaking decision-making that we have, the regulatory decision-making that we have. And then, as you'll see from these numbers, we are running at a relatively lean capacity, and we'll show you as we walk through this today. So with that, I turn it to Tim, and he'll go through the numbers. We'll kind of go back and forth a little bit today.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Janke. Pronunciation, I apologize. Can you run?
I'm sorry?
Introduce yourself for the record, and then we'll be able to pronounce your name.
All right.
Thank you.
Tim Janke, Chief Financial Officer for Commerce. We're going to start here on page 3, Mr. Chair. There's a chart at the top and then a graphic pie chart here that can kind of better illustrate some of the numbers. Basically, we're looking here at department expenditures, proposed department expenditures by fund. You'll see that the general fund is about $42 million over the coming biennium, which is a fairly small percentage of our overall budget. It's only about 7.6% of the total commerce budget. The total spending of $556 is really driven by federal funds in the energy area. A large piece of that is later on is our energy assistance funding, energy assistance program funding. And of note, I guess the general fund is 0.11% of our total state general fund budget, the governor's budget. Moving to page 4, it's basically a different cut of that same spending information. It's still at the 556, but this is looking at it by work unit or by programmatic area. You can see here what I'd mentioned earlier, that the Office of Energy Security is really the bulk of our agency funding at about 76%, and it's mainly driven by those federal funds. Moving on to the next page, page 5, is a slide that identifies our revenues versus expenditures. You can see here we have just over $664 million in expected revenues for the next biennium and just over $556 million in spending. 186 of that revenue comes into the general fund, and only 42,000 is what we're appropriated for expenditures. So you'll note that there's about $144 million that's over-collected there. Moving on, the next page identifies department FTE.
Excuse me, Mr. Janke. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Janke, I know that this is the energy portion we're interested in, but the general fund numbers you just laid out in front of us interest me. If the Department of Commerce's mission is, of course, to set the stage for fair and open competition and helping foster a good business climate, tell me who we're collecting those the additional $144 million in revenue from and how that fits into the mission of the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Janke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the general fund collects those funds. There's about $25 million of that comes from unclaimed property. That's just property that's coming into the state. Another big chunk of that is in the securities registration. The redeemable registration is in the $28 million range on an annual basis. Those are both annual numbers. So those are the largest chunks of the revenue that is coming into the general fund. Beyond that, there's license fees for various types of licenses. That's the bulk of those, of that revenue. And as for the second part of your question, that's maybe the commissioner can handle that piece of it, but
Commissioner Rothman.
Well, it's generally historically just in a way for, as far as I understand, the state to, again, going back to the license fees to collect that revenue. And then it's the unclaimed property money. You'll see the unclaimed property amount is a significant dollar figure. So, you know, it has to go somewhere, and it's really it escheats to the state, so that money comes in that way.
And follow up, Representative Beard.
Quick follow up. I just want to illustrate the point that commerce has actually become a revenue generator for the general fund for other things other than just the mission of commerce. And to be fair, Commissioner Rothman, you've been on the job about 4 weeks now, and I've been here 8 years with
nine, Representative Beard.
Well, that we're working on our ninth. It just seems like eight, I suppose. But to be fair, those fees and so on have been around for a while, so I'm not assigning blame. I'm just observing and want the committee to bear in mind that commerce does more than just administer rules and regulations on keeping business orderly. Apparently, it's become a revenue generator for other general fund functions, and I just wanted to note that for the committee. Thank you.
Continue, Mr. Jenkins.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 6 is a graphic here that identifies the department's FTE. I'm trying to show it over time here. We had back in FY2, we had just over 349 and a half FTE. Comparing that to fiscal year 10 that was just ended, we had 324, which is about a 25 FTE decline, or about 7% over that period of time. So I think we've been trying to play our part and do our best along the way. You can see the pie chart here that just graphically represents those fiscal 10 numbers. You can see that market insurance and the Office of Energy Security are the bulk of the employees, and then the various units there, the other units are identified as well.
Representative Knute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Jenke. And this, I'm curious how, you're going down 25 employees or so in the last decade. And, I know in the last few years that there's been a lot of federal energy money coming through this agency. And I'm just curious what the difference, and some of that energy money has declined in 12 and 13 or will be declining. What the difference is in terms of the amount of money and the work happening in the agency with that 25 employee reduction, or if people are being more productive or they're assigned to different tasks, or if you could just comment on that a little bit.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jenke.
Representative Knuth. The energy area has actually stayed, they have had a spike of over 20 FTE that are on temporary unclassified positions right now that will be slowly being phased out as the ARA funding goes away. Where you'll see, I think, the bigger changes have been in the financial institutions area and the administrative services area. So in admin, we've cut about 27 FTE over that period of time. To your point, I think we've done a lot in this period of time with automating. We've had a number of computer systems come online that have helped us administratively do our jobs better or do them more quickly. But as we, as you can see, the decline in those areas, that those are pretty big chunks in our admin services area. We're kind of getting down there. So, those are the major areas where we've had some reductions.
Continue, Mr. Jenke.
Moving on to page 7. We're going to start moving more now into those past slides were agency-wide. We're going to start taking a walk through some of the individual programmatic areas here. The first area is financial institutions. You can see here that the expenditures in financial institutions are going to be just over $20 million for the coming biennium. Of that, about $13.5 million is general fund dollars, of which all of those costs are assessed out, or the bulk of those costs are assessed out to the regulated entities, and there's no cost to the general fund. So in essence, what happens is the legislature appropriates those funds up front, that unit does its work, and then assesses the industry. Those funds flow back into the general fund to offset those costs. In addition, there's about $6.6 million of special revenue funds that primarily revolve around the insurance area, that are in the insurance exams area there, and the HMO exams. Those are the two areas that have those special revenue funds. Moving on to page 8 is our administrative services area. We have basically kind of three programmatic areas in the administrative services area. We have the admin management, which is primarily human resources, accounting, commissioner's office, those types of areas. We have information services, and then our unclaimed property unit. Of the $10.1 million in spending over the biennium, 7.7 of that is general fund appropriations, and $1.2 million or I'm sorry, $2.4 million is special revenue fund. Those are funds that flow in from the, it's our indirect cost account. So we are able to use a portion of our federal funds to fund our administrative services area. And so that's $2.4 million of the 10. Moving on to page 9 is the petrol fund. We have estimated about $30.5 million of expenditures over the coming biennium for the petrol fund. We'll get to it later, but some of this spending is based on a change item that's in the governor's budget, and we'll get to that at the end of the presentation here. The admin, you'll see that about 2.1 of this is operating expenses. So that funds about 8.5 staff, I believe it is, and basically the back office costs, rent, and all the other types of things. I know we're moving quick through this, Mr. Chair, so if there's questions, but I'll just keep following along. We move on to page 10 here is the market assurance area.
Excuse me, Mr. Janke. Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I heard Mr. Janke say he was going to come back to the petrol fund, so I was thinking about holding my question, but...
Representative Beard, can I ask? I have questions on that fund, too, and I'd like to deal with it when we have the change item, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I'd like Mr. Janke to go relatively quick through the budget and the change items. I have questions on petrol fund that I'd like to deal with at the end when we get to the change items. Okay. Representative Beard, would you be willing to hold your question?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, if that's the case, and I have questions in several areas, I'll just hold them until we blow through the presentation here.
If they're in regards to the change items, I guess I'd like to leave them until then. Continue, Mr. Janke. I would try and allow enough time for the change items at the end of your presentation and questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll take this next page, and then when we get to the numbers, go back to Tim. Market assurance, this gives you an overview of its responsibilities. It receives calls and investigates complaints from consumers in all the areas that we regulate. There are over 35,000 complaints handled by the folks in the market assurance area. About 7,000 complaints are investigated in a formal fashion by our staff. In addition to the enforcement activities, we've laid out four other areas of responsibility. These are, our staff are split along these lines. There's a policy analysis unit, and they review insurance company policy forms, rates, and license the companies. There's the licensing unit. There are over 200,000 individuals and business entities that are licensed in the department. We also, through the department, we also have a registration unit, reviews the applications for the common stock, limited partnership, investment company securities, and a variety of things, including franchises. And also, we also have the unit of the insurance fraud that conducts investigations, makes arrests in case of insurance fraud allegations, and the department relies on the cooperation of many of the partners that we work with in law enforcement, prosecution, and the private industry.
Mr. Chair, moving on to page 11, market assurance expenditures. About 54.5 million for the coming biennium. There's a couple, three big areas here, I guess, the biggest one being the insurance exchange, and then our insurance fraud prevention and auto theft prevention area and licensing. Of the total expenditures here, $12.3 million next biennium are general fund. We have about $12.2 in special revenue fund, and then about $28 million in federal funds in this area. Moving on to the next page, it's our telecommunications division. It's a relatively small shop. They have... about $2 million in general fund expenditures estimated for next that are included in the governor's budget. Again, this is an area within the department that all funds are recovered. So All costs for this area are assessed out to the regulated entities, and this has a zero net impact on the general fund. The governor's budget proposed no changes in that area. The next page 13 here, is the TAM, or Telecommunication Access Minnesota account or program. You can see here that they, you look down the in the chart, there's about $370,000 in operational or admin costs that fund 1.1 FTE, and then the back office costs. The bigger funding in this program is for the relay service and the equipment distribution service. Those total about $11 million of the proposed $12.8 million in spending. Moving on to the page 14 is the Office of Energy Security.
And just a quick overview of the Office of Energy Security. We have, again, a variety of units within the Energy Division. There's the Energy Facilities Permitting Unit. It manages the permitting process and develops environmental review record for the siting or routing of large energy facilities. And it serves as the technical staff to the Public Utilities Commission on these issues. We also have the State Energy Office. It promotes energy efficiency and renewable energy through financing programs, technical assistance, and public information. There's the Conservation Improvement Program, Weatherization Assistance Program, State Energy Program, and the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grants. A third unit is the Energy Assistance Program. It manages the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, the LIHEAP Program. There's our Energy Regulation and Planning Unit, which advocates for Minnesota's public interest in utility rate cases, certificates of need, and resource planning. And then as well, we have the OES Administration Reliability, which is a division for management and policy system for reliability. And then on the next page, the OES... It shows the OES revenue sources and its distribution. I'll have Tim kind of walk you through that.
Mr. Chair and members, this is just a higher level kind of the funding in the Office of Energy Security. There's a number of different funding sources, and the money flows in this general pattern. We have the federal funds that are identified in blue here. We receive federal funds from two separate federal agencies, the U.S. Department of Energy, which funds the weatherization program, as well as the State Energy Office. And federal HHS funds the Energy Assistance Program. Those are the big areas. You can see here in green is the state-funded areas. We have general fund that covers general operational costs and the Energy Regulatory and Planning Unit. We have a number of special
Mr.
revenue
Jenke,
accounts.
Ours is black and white. Could you just
Which
one it was?
I'll hold it up here real quick. The federal funds are up here in blue. Everything else on the bottom and the side are green.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke. Not that I want the next one to be in color.
Yes.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
The special revenue fund funds a number of areas, the energy facility permitting area, the Renewable Development Fund accounts, the SIP, and the Reliability Administrator. All of those are special revenue funds, basically funds from fees or assessments that come in for those special purposes.
Sure.
Moving on to page 16.
Excuse me, Mr. Yep. Jenke. Representative Beard.
This is just an explain what we're looking at question for Mr. Jenke. On these bottom, you get general fund from on the left.
Yep.
The special revenue source is what I'm looking for. I know the RDF, that's the money where we extract from Excel for the cash storage. And you know, there currently is discussion about the legislative legality of what we've done there. But the one in the middle that says Exxon in the middle, would you refresh our memory on what that one is? And then a brief question on how the CIP funds flow, too, especially Exxon.
Mr. Jenke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, we have in the Special Revenue Fund, there's funding that has remained around for a number of years from when the Exxon Valdez went down. By court order, there was funds that came to the states to do energy efficiency types of programs. Mr. DeFebri can potentially add a whole lot more information to what those funds are used for if you're interested.
Actually, I am.
Representative Beard.
Can we hear it now?
Why don't we hear it right now?
And then maybe Mr. DeFebri can explain, too, how the CIP funds, which are supposed to be spent for energy efficiency, how they accrue to the OES as well.
Mr. DeFebri, welcome, and take a stab at both of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeremy DeFebri with the Department of Commerce Office of Energy Security. And Representative Beard, to the first question, the Exxon funds, actually, I'm making a habit of correcting my superiors. fortunately, I'm close to Rule of 90, so I can get away with it. The Exxon funds actually predated the Exxon Valdez. They were related to a settlement for petroleum pricing violations during the price controls of the 1970s that was entered into in 1986, I believe, and $36.5 million was received by the state through that settlement that came to the then Department of Energy and Economic Development for distribution through a variety of means. The amounts that remain from 1986, there is a revolving loan program that is operated by a subgrantee for energy efficiency improvements in residential property. That's a $1.6 million revolving fund. And then there is approximately $1 million for public buildings enhanced energy efficiency program at Department of Administration for state level, and then approximately $8 million for PBEEP at local level. That's to be used largely for program administration, cash flow of service delivery, and cash flow assistance as needed.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Mr. Clear, then the CIP fund.
Representative Beard.
Briefly describe how money from the Conservation Improvement Plan flows to OES and how that gets sent back out.
Mr. LeFebvre.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, the special revenue funds under SIP are statutory assessments that are used to provide the administrative costs and oversight and for R&D grants for near-term energy efficiency deployment.
Follow-up, Representative Beard.
Yes, the 1986 settlement, was this what we know colloquially as the windfall profits tax? And I thought so. And you mentioned a third party or an outside party actually administers that for us. Who is that?
Mr. LeFebvre, just to clarify, you nodded your head yes to Representative Beard's previous question.
Sorry for the tape. Yeah, we couldn't
for the tape. Mr. LeFebvre.
Mr.
LeFebvre,
Chairman,
is that right?
DeFebvre.
I got to get it right. Excuse me.
Thank
That's
you.
Not Irish, is it?
only a very little bit.
All right.
It's perhaps a rounding error. That's
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard. I'm sorry, but I forgot the question.
Representative Beard.
The answer is you're Irish on March 17th or thereabouts. But the question was, we administered it through a third party, the windfall profits tax settlement from back in the 70s and 80s. There was a chunk of cash that came to the state. Thank you for clarifying that. You mentioned we administer it through a third party. Can you tell us who that is?
Mr. DeFebvre.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, that $1.6 million that's in a revolving loan is at the Center for Energy and Environment. It has been since 1993.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner, please continue.
Okay. Thank you.
Or Mr. Jenke, I guess you were in the middle of it.
Yeah, the next.
Again, we're on page 15, members.
The next slide is another one giving you some more numbers, so Mr. Jenke will.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 16, basically breaking down or looking at the Office of Energy Security a bit here, we have funding by source or basically by fund and by unit as well. This represents a biennial budget of about just over $420 million for the Office of Energy Security. You can see by the slide or the chart or the graph on the left here that federal funds are the primary driver of that $420 million. We have $353 of regular, what we call regular federal funding, and then just over $36 million of ARA funding or federal stabilization money. On the right is basically taking that and just breaking it down by work units. You can kind of see which areas are the biggest users or have the largest percent of the budget, and the energy assistance program is by far the largest in the Office of Energy Security. Moving on to page 17 is just a further breakdown of those OES dollars. It's still that same $420 million, and it just breaks it down by funding type and then by work unit. So it kind of combines the last two slides. I won't read all of those for you, but you can see within each funding area which work unit is spending those dollars. Mr. Chair, on to the last page, which includes the governor's change items. The governor's budget included three change items for the Department of Commerce. The first one is expediting regulatory decision making, which adds three positions into the Office of Energy Security for a cost of $265,000 a year. Those positions would be fully assessed and they would have a net zero cost on the general fund. Those positions would be used for expediting rate cases and other filings before the PUC and to help the staffing over in the Office of Energy Security work on those types of items. The second item here is the extension of the Petro Fund sunset. Currently, it's set to sunset on June 30th of 2012. This would extend that program for 5 years and continue it at the same level that it is right now. And then the last item in the governor's budget is an operating budget reduction in the market assurance and administrative services area. They total $520,000, $316,000 of which would come out of the market assurance area. That would be the elimination of three positions that are currently vacant. And then there would be $204,000 that would it's primarily two FTE and admin services plus some other kind of back office trying to work on, reducing other costs there as well. That would amount to the $204,000. And again, those are vacant positions. In anticipation of the coming budget, we hadn't been filling positions, trying not to hire folks on that we potentially would have to lay off in the coming months. So that's the end of the formal presentation here.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke. And how many unfilled positions would you say the department has currently?
It's hard to, Mr. Chair, it's hard to say specifically, but we have probably 4 to 6 in the market assurance area. We have probably the two in admin services. That was all we had that were unfilled. In the Office of Energy Security, I think we're fairly current, but there may be one or two that are either in process or vacant right now. We can get that information for you, though.
That's close enough. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, just an observation before I go to the Petroleum Tank Fund. On page 5 of the narrative in this handy notebook that we have, you talk about some of the things you're doing with financial well-being of our banks and so on. Several of us that were here last term were part of something called the Small Business Caucus. And I remember a couple of the presentations we had in that caucus were state-chartered banks coming and explaining to us how they did their business, how they related to the state of Minnesota, and how they were finding the credit markets, the regulatory environment, and so on. Just Mr. Chair and members, and maybe Mr. Rothman, I noted that the banks face no less than five regulatory reviews a year, one of which is the Department of Commerce. Of course, the FDIC comes in and gives them a financial colonoscopy about once a year. The Comptroller over currency comes down and afflicts them. The Treasury Department, and I think the Attorney General shows up from time to time if they think there might be mischief. And then, of course, there's the agency. And, of course, the banks get to pay for every one of these out of their own earnings. So I just wanted to note that sometimes we think there might be regulatory overkill. And in the next committee, Commerce, if you'd like to comment on how your agency fits in and cooperates with these other four federal agencies that do, near as I can tell, pretty much the same thing Commerce does, that could be helpful in helping the legislature understand why we do what we do to people who are trying to make the financial engine of this state work. Moving to the Petro Fund program.
Time out. Representative Beard.
Sure.
Commissioner Rothman, or phone a friend, or any comment on Representative Beard's comments?
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative Beard, let me, I'd also like to call Deputy Commissioner Kevin Murphy to the table. Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Deputy Commissioner Murphy. If you could let us know your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Kevin Murphy, Mr. Chairman.
Let me just preface everything.
Mr. Roth.
A few comments. As many people, as many know in this room, and as Minnesota's consumers know, Minnesota's banks know, and our businesses know, Minnesota's banking system is in a precarious position right now, and it has been through the economy since 2007, and we all know that. Just a couple more points. From a state perspective, the Minnesota Department of Commerce regulates the state chartered banks. There is some regulatory overlap in a sense, but Minnesota, the department, is responsible for the safety and soundness of the state chartered banks. As you know, those banks are in serious condition. There were approximately 10 or 12 that went down last year, and they continue to be in troubled situation. There are 305 state chartered banks. Of them, a third are on our watch list. It's grown and it's gotten larger. We anticipate that there will be a few more this year. It's basically my perspective that we need to maintain and ensure the safety and soundness of our chartered banks in Minnesota. That's one of my number one priorities. We will continue to do that. How that works is we have examiners that are out there in the field making sure that the balance sheets and the loan portfolios of these banks are maintained at an appropriate level. If a bank is in serious condition, it's through Kevin Murphy, our deputy, and our staff that monitors these the numbers. And then, as well, we have the staffing available to help facilitate a seamless change in transition in the event that a bank goes down. And what that is, it requires is multi-jurisdictional cooperation with the FDIC to make sure that they kick in and that we're all working appropriately. I personally talked with many of our CEOs of our financial institutions in the banking area as I started my position. They're all have given their assurances and have said that they'll be available to help us and assist us, not with just the safety and soundness of the banks, but also with the mortgage foreclosure problems and crisis that we have. So this area is a very serious area, and I appreciate your comments, but at the same time, it's our responsibility to make sure that we maintain a safe and sound banking system, which is the arteries and lifeblood, in a way, for our economy and our rural and metropolitan communities.
Deputy Commissioner Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I'd like to address the comments about the overlap in the regulatory apparatus in the banking world. And it is pretty complicated, and if you were to start from scratch, you probably wouldn't come up with the arrangement that we have now, but we do have it. And in Minnesota, we have 305 state banks, and a state bank or a bank needs a license to operate. They can have either a state license or a federal license. So we're responsible for regulating 305 state banks. and we are full partners with the FDIC. The exam schedule is usually every 18 months. We take turns, or else we do it together. The team would be staffed by both FDIC and state personnel. There are about 90 federally chartered banks or national banks in Minnesota, and those are get their license from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and most people also do periodic examinations. The state really has no involvement with those banks. The Attorney General is not involved in bank regulation for the most part. On occasion, the Attorney General might take on one of the bigger banks if they think they're doing something horrible, but that's not the mainstream bank regulation. So even though the system might seem fairly complicated, that there is not the overlap that you characterized.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Beard, or do you want to get into petroleum fund?
I want to move to petroleum fund, but I want to thank the gentlemen for their comments on this, because what I remember from the Small Business Caucus was there did seem to be concern that there was some overlap, and perhaps if there was better coordination with the feds and the state, we could perhaps lower some of the overhead costs. And the regulations that involve what we call, I believe, rated loans, there could probably be a little more help there. But that perhaps is a discussion for another committee. But again, thank you for your comments, for shedding further light on it, because that perception is out there, and I have heard testimony that raised concern about those issues as we move forward with our banking industry. But the Petroleum Fund, Mr. Chairman, it really interests me mostly on a couple levels. One is I chair the Transportation Committee, and we're dealing with a fuel tax. And I'm, if someone could speak perhaps to the history of that, whether or not it's been ever challenged on constitutional grounds, Minnesota constitutional grounds, as to how we could tax fuel and not dedicate it to the Highway User Fund. And I understand there is a nexus, actually, between fuel tanks, automobiles, and making transportation thrive in this state. It's a fund that's been around for a while. If you can talk a little bit about the history of it, then I have a question about how many tanks we've identified, if anybody can see light at the end of the tunnel, and so on and so forth.
Representative Beard, excuse me. Representative Wagenius, you had a question. Was it to the previous point? I may need to bring Deputy Commissioner Murphy back up. I apologize. Representative Wagenius had a question. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. My question was going to be to the Commissioner, because Representative Beard left me with the impression that our banks were all sturdy and solid and didn't need any oversight. So I think the Commissioner cleared up that issue.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Back to petrol fund. Right, we're used to musical chairs.
Mr. Chair, I was just looking to introduce Joel Fisher. And
welcome, Mr. Fisher. Was it Mr. Fisher?
Great.
Yeah.
Joel Fisher, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Chair, I'm Joel Fisher. I'm the director of the Petro Fund program. Representative Beardy, I can give a quick history of the Petro Fund. I always love the opportunity to talk about that. The Petro Fund's been around since 1987, and it was created in response to federal legislation. Basically, you have all these bare steel underground storage tanks out there holding gas and diesel and whatnot, and they were leaking like crazy. And so the federal government basically said by 1998, all of these tanks regulated tanks need to be either upgraded or replaced. And they also had some requirements regarding leak detection on the piping and whatnot. And so there was a tremendous changeover in these tanks up through 1998. And as part of that legislation, they also required that all of the tank owners have up to $1 million worth of financial assurance. And that's how the Petro Fund came into existence. Basically, the private insurers at that point, for the most part, didn't want to touch these sites because they're, as one of our board members says, why do you want to insure a burning building? And so most of the states around the country, 48 of the states, created Petro Fund-type programs. They're all the same basic idea with some variations on it. And the Petro Fund provides up to $1 million of coverage per release, $2 million per leak site, basically. And we've done that since 1987. In that time, I believe we've paid about 30,000 claims at about 13,000 sites across the state. A total of just over 18,000 leaks have actually been identified and reported to the Pollution Control Agency in the history of the program. regarding your question, Representative Beard, in terms of has anybody challenged the legality of the Petra Fund fee, I'm not aware of that. I've been with the program. I've been director 4 years. I've been with the program for about 17 years, and I don't recall that in that time it has been, but I can't say that for certain.
Representative Beard. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fisher, thank you for the brief oversight, and I think everyone agrees that at least in the 8 years I've been on the Transportation Committee, and this comes up from time to time, that there is germaneness between leaking fuel tanks and automobiles and trucks on highways and bridges. We can see the relationship there. And, of course, knowing the old technology and how we kind of fell into the fact they actually do rust and leak, and this is not a good thing. We do need to clean these up. No one has wanted to challenge it to that point. You did mention a couple of things. We cleaned up 13,000 sites. You used a number of 30,000 in there, and I missed what that was in connection to. Is that how many sites we've identified, or
Mr. Fisher,
did I miss here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the 30,000 is actual claims that we've paid since 1987. That's a rough number, obviously.
Mr. Fisher, could you explain how you pay more claims than sites? Is there multiple claims on an individual site?
Sure, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, basically we have 30,000 claims on 13,000 sites.
All right.
Applicants can apply for reimbursement. Either they can wait till they're all done with the cleanup and apply once, or they can apply as they go. So in some cases, if the cleanup goes over a few years, they may submit multiple applications.
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, it seemed like a very reasonable response to a very serious problem when you had a lot of ma-and-pa type gas stations, and getting into a leak like this could be very expensive. This seemed to be a thoughtful approach to spreading the cost of the difficulty to the people who benefited most, which is all of us who drove and used the highway system, which I think is one reason I think the germaneness to the Highway User Fund and fuel tax and so on makes sense. However, I'm noticing a change order, and this is where I'd kind of like you to talk about where you think you'd like to go with this by extending the sunset, first of all. Perhaps before we do that, we should establish why we're moving the sunset. How many more of these tanks do you think are out there that need cleaned up? If we were to let this run for its current purpose, how much longer would it be until we had all the tanks switched over to a more leak-proof technology? And is the leak-proof even a fair word to use? Are we going to be seeing leaks in perpetuity? And so we're going to have this around forever, for a long time.
Mr. Fisher, and then maybe as an answer to Representative Beard, how many states don't have petrol fund that they let private insurance deal with it? Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, trying to remember all the questions.
Sorry to throw one more at you.
That's all right.
Representative Beard.
If I may, let me just start with the easy one. How many sites have we identified that we have to monitor and could possibly be a problem?
Mr. Fisher.
Is there a fixed number that we know we're shooting at here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard. In terms of a fixed number, there's the list of all the regulated tanks in the state, and I'm not exactly sure what that number is off the top of my head. There are also a fairly significant number of tanks we probably don't even know are there, abandoned tanks that we just aren't aware of. There also is a fairly large number of unregulated tanks that we don't have a good handle on. That would be farm tanks for the most part, home heating oil tanks. There's a little bit of a better idea of how many there are. Where the new releases are coming from, for the most part, is a combination of those unregulated tanks and even the tanks that have been upgraded. So basically all of your gas stations, your distributors, fuel oil distributors, or petroleum distributors and that, their tanks are up to code or up to date, basically. But it's not infallible. Even with leak detection systems and whatnot, in Minnesota we have frost and whatnot, that has a definite effect on the tank systems themselves. You're going to have releases like that. You have mistakes that are made, overfills when they're at the gas stations. So there's still ways that petroleum is still getting into the environment. It's a lot less than it used to be. Right now, it's basically leveled off. We're right between about 350 and 400 new releases are reported every year to the MPCA. So that's been pretty level for about 6-7 years now. And that's where it's coming from. It's not coming from the historical where there's tanks. The tanks nowadays don't have holes in them anymore for the most part like they used to, and that's where the contamination mainly came from. Now it's more coming from the system, the lines, the dispensers, that sort of thing.
Then, Mr. Chairman, my question then becomes, if we still have a 300 or 400...
Representative Beard.
Thank you. 300 or 400 tanks a year that are sites that are applying for the program, First of all, I like the trend line. It seems to be going down, and substantially, that's a good thing. But on page 10 of the narrative, it talks about perhaps extending the deadline or extending the sunset and deflecting it, if I'm reading this correctly, funding for other programs at MPCA and over at DEED. What's the plan there?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard. The funding that goes over to DEED and the MPCA, DEED gets 6.2, it was lowered to $3.7 million this last year, but it'll go back to $6.2 million a year to cover grants to clean up contaminated brownfields, basically. It has to have some kind of petroleum aspect to it in order to qualify for the grant, but that's where that money goes. The MPCA receives, part of, they get an appropriation from the Petro Fund to cover operations for the petroleum remediation program, the emergency response folks who handle petroleum contamination. And they also get approximately right around $5 million a year that they request from the Petro Fund to fund cleanups where there's either not a viable responsible person, in which case the state has to foot the entire bill, or there are cases where someone, let's say, refuses to do the cleanup or doesn't have the financial means. If they refuse to do it but they have the financial means, we go back and recover the costs from them. But there are applicants out there who just don't have the money, and so the state steps in and cleans up those sites as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the shedding the light on it, because it was not clear from the narrative that there'd still be some sort of a nexus between a petroleum product probably tied to transportation and where the fund was being deflected to. So as we move forward, we'll think about that. But thank you for clarifying that for us and bringing us up to speed. And Mr. Chairman, as far as the banking regulation, I think I'm just going to let that one go. It's a comment that I'll take as tongue-in-cheek, and we'll just leave it at that.
Well, Representative Beard, I'm glad you let it go. We've got three more people that wait to talk, and we have 7 minutes. Mr. Fisher, is there 6 states that currently don't have petrol fund that use private insurance?
Mr. Chair, there's 12 states, I believe, who don't have petrol fund programs, a straight petrol fund program like Minnesota does. They have some variation on it, private insurance. Or Iowa, for example, their Petroleum Marketers Association created their own fund, basically. So there's different variations on it. So there are 38 states that still have petrol fund programs, type programs. Every state, even the ones that have gone over to a different mechanism, still have a small petrol fund type program to cover those sites where there's no viable responsible person. Okay. So, because the state has, someone has to step in.
Mr. Fisher, the petrol fund experience that I'm familiar with, there was a small leak. When diesel fuel tank would be filled in the overfill, whatever you call that little basket kind of deal around the filler, diesel fuel doesn't evaporate like gasoline. So there was a little bit of diesel fuel would go into the sand around that tank, but the tank was located about 20 feet below ground, was bedrock. Substantial amount of sand on top of the bedrock between the tank, as was required when the tank was put in the mid-80s before the late 80s change. But when the tank was removed, the inspector who was required to stand alongside the removal by the removal contractor, an engineering firm was required to be part of watching it. And he said, oh, this is a diesel tank. Well, this will be a contaminated site. There's diesel on the sand here, and because there was bedrock underneath, even though that it was for all practical purposes, everyone said there's 10 or 15 yards of diesel fuel tainted sand here, tens of thousands of dollars of state money were expended, what didn't seem to be reasonable. This is about a 5-year-old experience. Has this been changed, or is this still current law? I think it was, what I suppose in your standards would be a relatively small claim. It may have been 20 grand or something to do all the work, but it didn't seem like it was government at its best at the time when I watched it happen. I'm just wondering if you could, is this typical, and does this happen a lot, or have times changed in the last 5 years? Or and then interestingly, you get all involved, you got MPCA, Department of Commerce, and different inspection consulting firms hired, and the bureaucracy just seems to go and go. And one consulting firm said, well, it was subject to interpretation. Maybe you wouldn't have needed to go that route. have we changed anything in the last 5 years as far as how that might happen going forward?
Mr. Chair, in that respect, yeah, in a situation like that, the pollution can, maybe should say the Department of Commerce, we work very closely with the Pollution Control Agency. In terms of determining reimbursement, the Pollution Control Agency determines what work needs to be done. The applicant in this case would hire an environmental consultant. They would do the work, and then they would apply for reimbursement from us. We contact the PCA to make sure that the work was required. We document or determine the reasonableness of the costs. I know the MPCA has just gone through a long process of redoing their guidance documents to help consultants and applicants understand how to do the cleanup and what to do in certain situations. And I know in that respect, they've made it much clearer for the consultants, you know, what needs to be done. In terms of like a specific site like that, probably one of the best things that Minnesota has done from our perspective is they've taken on risk-based corrective action. And so in a case like that, they would evaluate, they might just leave the contamination in the soil in that case. They evaluate what type of risk is it. Are there groundwater wells nearby? Are there drinking water wells? Is there basements nearby that the vapors from the petroleum might get into? And if not, if it's not going to harm, get into any of those things or basically harm anyone, they may just leave it there. And that actually has saved Minnesota a ton of money. From a Petrofund perspective, our average cost is about $31,000 that we reimburse per site. The national average is like $124,000 per site.
So Mr. Fisher, is this new change in the last 5 years?
The guidance documents, or Mr. Chair, the guidance documents have just gone into effect just recently. Like, they would go into effect April 1st, actually, is when they officially go into effect. Otherwise, I guess I'm no. I mean, it's brand new.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Follow-up, Representative Beard. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. As I recall, when I'd buy bulk fuel for the farm, there'd be a penny or two added to the cost of the fuel to cover the petrol fund. But sometimes they would not collect it if the fund had built up enough reserves, kind of off again, on again. Is that still the case, or is it collected pretty much all the time now?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the petrol fund, it's funded with a 2 cent per gallon fee that only turns on when our fund balance drops below $4 million. So when it drops below that, we have a five-member board. I then notify our board, and then they decide when to turn it on. And it stays on for 4 months. After 4 months, the fee automatically turns off. We were on a schedule of about 4 months out of the year, but with the lower number of claims and such coming in, we're about every 14 months it turns on. And I'll be recommending to the board in the next week that they turn it on in June of this year.
So, Mr. Fisher, about 30% of the time it's on?
That's
Thank
correct.
You. Any yeah. follow-up, Representative Anderson? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. maybe this question might be for the MPCA. I don't know. But the guidance sheet, I was interested in that discussion and Representative McNamara's discussion. Please assure me there is some common sense happening in this area. I don't have a lot of confidence there is, but when they find contaminated soil, what is guiding that guidance sheet? Is it rule? Is it law? When they do find contaminated soil, do they go out and do the common sense thing and spread it out on farmland so the bacteria can mitigate it, or are we encumbering all kinds of state resources and putting this in glass and plastic lined landfills or something like that?
Mr. Fisher, are you the appropriate agency, or is MPCA for the Representative Drazkowski's question?
Mr. Chair, I can probably address it.
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, the MPCA, when they came up with these guidance documents, they talked with the state consultant, state contractors to come up with them. And as part of it, and one of the things that changes, they do a cost-benefit analysis. So the environmental consultant does the investigation, and they then offer some options for what the cleanup should be based on not just what work should be done, but cost-effectiveness. And they've really gotten away from excavating soil for the most part because it's not very cost-effective, really, except for the cases where you really have no other option. That's what they go with. Now they're moving more into, again, leave it if at all possible. If that's not possible, they may try a remediation system. And even in that they've basically limited to about 2 years. They've said, well, run it for 2 years. If that's not getting the job done, then we need to try something else.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Krogman, did you have any comment on the petrol fund? If you wanted to just step forward, where our time is going to run out in about 9 seconds, so if you can have something to say, Mr. Krogman, then I just wanted to give the commissioner an opportunity to say goodbye. Mr. Krogman, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. We're the mom and pops Representative Beard talked about. I was around when the Petro Fund was adopted and gone through all the changes. I'm essentially old, but I remember a lot of that stuff. The main focus of the Petro Fund now is the financial assurance program. It doesn't only cover underground tanks or transportation tanks. It covers all tanks, school districts, city garages, farmers, homeowners, anyone who would have to have insurance, which is not available, is covered by the petrol fund. The 2 cents per gallon fee was envisioned as reducing to a penny a gallon and going on once every 2 years, with the fund operating as that financial assurance mechanism. But there's been appropriations to the fund, $6 million a year for brownfield cleanup. I personally think they're appropriate, and the legislature did too. Appropriations to other good programs,
okay,
that fee would probably be smaller and go on a lot less often.
Thank you, Mr. Krogman. Commissioner, any just saying goodbye?
That's it. We just want to thank you for your time today. We appreciate your efforts. And then as well, if there are questions that come up for either myself or the staff, we're available whenever you'd like. Thank you very much.
Commissioner. Thank you for being here. Meeting adjourned.